So in this tutorial, I'm going to walk you through how to set up the spinning bootstrap. And the code we'll be looking at will be in Fermion 3D GitLab repository. So, and again, it's structured very similar to the Scalar 3D repository. And again, we get the bound file and project file just like yesterday. And again, we're going to look at the bound files. So, right, and the main difference is really just now the bound files will talk to blocks 3D instead of scalar blocks. Yep, and the plan is we'll first to look at the file with four fermions, and involved there will be mainly just a block 3D, like replacing scalar blocks with 3D spinning blocks. And after that, I will be looking at the GNY bootstrap, adding the ON global symmetry.
Could you show the repository again?
Sure. So if you just go, it's GitLab, db.simon.in from your 3D. You find it?
Okay.
Okay. And so compare with the scalar bootstrap, the Ising bootstrap we did yesterday, the thing that will be other parts are very similar, but the main changes will happen to the crossing equations and the OPE channels. So the setup, there'll be four identical fermions. So we just got to get one crossing equations in terms of the four-point functions. And we will get the labels on the three-point structures and different four-point structures. That's what we went through this morning. And yeah, so those are things you need to encode in the file. So those are very similar to yesterday's structure. So again, define your external operators and your, because we only have one operator here, so really we just need, so yesterday we had another data type with the scaling dimensions of sigma and epsilon. Now we only have one operator, so there's no need to define another data type for it. And yeah, those are similar. The spectrum now are labeled by the spins and their parities. Okay, not too much update over there. Now going to the crossing equations. So changes are, you can compare these functions with the crossing equations we looked at yesterday. The difference will be, there's another argument called sine x direction. I think that's what der means. And that's a f sine here. And the second line, almost the same as yesterday, except now we have a block 3DQ four-point structures. And last line is still the number of crossing equations. It's a vector of crossing equations. Sorry, it's a vector of five components corresponding to five crossing equations we have. And each component is a pair. And today, instead of using z and z bar coordinates, we're using x and t coordinates. And the second term is the same, except later on we'll see this b becomes block 3D blocks. Okay, and right, and just to clarify what this f sine means, so it just gives us some degrees of freedom later on when we want to add a global symmetry structure. So it's a, because we're, if we define our global four-point structures as, like we classify them as crossing even and crossing odd, then they'll just correspond to flipping the signs of, how should I say it? Without the global symmetry and this, the first line is crossing even, and then we add to we add a crossing even global structure, then this should still remain global. Crossing even. But if we instead add a crossing odd structure to it, then this this function should it flips the crossing symmetry, becomes crossing odd. So that's just the degrees of freedom you can use later on if we want to add other structures. But here, since we're only looking at just for fermions without the ON symmetries or anything, so this you can ignore it for now. Okay, and right, so those are the derivative, and the other parts are the crossing equations. And those crossing equations, do I have it here? Yeah, so the crossing equations, the last slides, the things are exactly these things. Like y even will correspond to y to the even powers, like partial y to the even powers. And x, so this is x odd, x even. So you just encode those lines into your into the crossing equations function. And one thing to notice here is we discussed very briefly this morning that the smoothness condition requires we throw away get rid of the n equals to zero case. And that's what this filter positive n is doing. But positive n is another function defined here, but it basically just requires that n is bigger than zero or greater or equal than one.
Can you remind me what the dot means if it's not like if it's part of the name? Is it just
sir, which dot?
V dot filter.
V is a module, and filter is a function within that module.
So that's not the normal filter.
It's a filter that acts on vectors. So, let me see.
It's not the usual definition of the filter function.
Okay.
So, minor Haskell point, you get a choice as to how you want to import things. In the same way that in Python, you can choose to import something as this, or just import it straight in, or import it so that you just still have to refer to the name. In Haskell, it's the same thing. So in this case, this function is defined in the V module, and we've chosen to import it in a way that you have to explicitly say v.filter. So you don't confuse yourself.
Yeah, so the usual filter acts on list, and this is a different data structure. Like the V is not a list. It can be taken, it can be transformed into a list. And I suspect that's what v.filter does actually in the code. Okay, so that's a crossing equation, and this again is just use the crossing equations crossing equations we wrote down in the last slide, and this is very similar to the version that what we had yesterday. Only difference again is the scalar blocks becomes 3D blocks, and the 3-point structures split out explicitly as they are labeled now by. So they are labeled by the, so those three types correspond to the types of the scaling dimensions of the first and second external operator, and delta correspond to the one, the exchange operator. Okay, and so that's crossing equations. And now let's turn to the OP channels. So those are the things that I took from this morning's slides. There are OP channels in the fermion of decomposition. And so again, the channels will just correspond to each case, depends on the representations of the exchange operator. And so you can see the parity even is the first line, and it takes the parity even spin even is the first line. And it takes a conformal representation just corresponding to this with delta and map it to, we'll see later on where the two comes from. But yeah, and this, maybe I should just flip, sorry about that. So those are the rest of the, where that two comes from. And the reason that, so when L equals to zero, or L equals to zero, that corresponds to O being a scalar, and we only have one structure, that's the first structure. And so that's because of this, we have to define the scalar channel separately from the other spin even channels. Okay. And right, let's go back here. And so those two lines correspond to the first case. And this, just iterate through parity odd, spin even, parity even, sorry, parity odd, spin odd, and correspond to each of them. And the rest are the identity channels, just tangential channel. And I didn't have the external here. But yeah, we don't have the external channel here. Okay. Right, so the next is to now take this abstract channels we defined and rewrite them in terms of the OP coefficients and call the quasi-mat FF we defined earlier. So this is also the same as yesterday. And now the three-point structures are written in SO3 basis. So that's just taking this table of the structures in SO3 basis and encode them here like this. Okay, the first rows will be a vector of two components. And I didn't write down the second one, but you can see the last one. Although it's a linear combination of two SO3 vector, but it's only one vector instead of two. So yeah, just write it down here. Okay, questions? I think it's just encoding, translating. It's not much to do. And yeah, identity channel is almost the same as what we wrote down yesterday, except again, instead of scalar blocks, no, there's a special type called identity block 3D. Yeah, and then again, turn the crossing equations corresponding to, sorry, the blocks corresponding to the operators in the spectrum into positive constraints. And same as yesterday, except now our channels are labeled by parity, spin, whether the spin is even or odd, and the spin itself. So depends on the cases, they are mapped into different channels and then passed into the some functions that turns the crossing equations into the crossing matrices into the positive constraints.
Question about the unit. Do you just plug in scaling dimension zero, or is there some other procedure?
Sorry, yeah?
When you do the unit.
Oh, unit.
To get its contribution, you plug in scaling dimension zero in the singlet channel, or is there some additional?
So we should be a little bit careful. So
yeah.
You could do that. That's perfectly valid. It's a waste of time.
Okay.
And so see here, it says B3D identity block 3D.
Uh-huh.
So at the level of the channel, we defined this channel as taking making identity blocks. So then when the code in the background goes in to build your SDP, instead of calling blocks 3D, it just plugs in the array of values you'd expect for the identity block, because it's just very trivial. That's all it is. But yes, it is at the level of the user, it's almost just plugging in zero.
I guess my question is, if I change the normalization of the unit of the singlet projector,
sure,
will this know that? Because in principle, there could be some issue with some normalization later.
Yeah.
So it knows that if I change the, okay.
Yeah.
And it's equivalent, even though you don't do it, it's equivalent to plugging in scaling dimension zero, you say?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the representation of the exchanged operator in there that determines sort of like exactly how the projection happens. And so since that's a singlet, it's exactly just a singlet.
Okay, and the last bit, just wrap things up and put our problems in as an STP. Almost exactly as yesterday. It's just some rearrangement of the code, but it's exactly the same. Okay, this is just comparing what has been rearranged, but it's not really. Yeah. So I see it's going from scalars to block 3D doesn't involve that many changes in terms of how the code is structured. Just some types and elements are changed. Okay, and then move on to the yeah.
I have a question. So, which part of the code you cause a scanner to scan? So for the problem, this code try to bound which parameter versus which parameter?
It's the objective, right?
Yeah, so this, sorry, when you say bound, do you mean, like,
so
can
this,
you give me an example?
This code is trying to bound which parameter versus which parameter.
When you say parameter, what do you
mean? How do you specify external dimensions and let's see, I want to bound the parity even scalar the dimension, how do I specify that? Or?
It's not part of this.
In the project.
It's in the project,
oh,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
The point is that this part of the code is totally divorced from any sorts of like actual like search procedures that you've done. This does not care about that at all.
The only kind of difference is to choose the feasibility mode and the optimization mode.
Or if you put a navigator in, for example,
yeah.
You can put it here.
Okay, and now moving to GNY, but mixing sigma and psi only with ON symmetry. And now, because we have a global symmetry now, so we need to define how to represent our global symmetry group. And again, we need to do something with the crossing equations and the OP channels. The rest are the same, basically the same. So I would just go direct, okay. This is kind of from just the things that need to go be updated in the code, those parts. And yeah, and so let's first go in. There's another file in Scalars 3D called onrep.hs. That's where the onrep and the different representations are defined. And right, so onrep is just the representations of a single operator. And here we limit our attention to the singlet vector and the symmetric and anti-symmetric tensor. So those are just four constructors correspond to each of the representation. And then we saw both yesterday and this morning, our three-point structures will have the following five three-point structures. And so because there's like one-to-one correspondence between the left-hand side and right-hand side, so essentially our n 3-point structures would just be labeled by the on reps of those O1, O2, and O. Right. And so up to now, it's still.
The little n should be the n of the group, or?
Yes, yes, yes. And you see it's a phantom type again.
Yeah, so it's a type, so.
Yeah, so in the code later on, you'll see it appears with the S together as yesterday.
Just one question.
Yeah.
Here I see you have IKJL minus ILJK, but in the code it was reversed, yeah? Mm-hmm.
IKJL.
For the last one.
Last one.
Yeah, if I'm taking that to be the projector, or I shouldn't take that to be the projector.
What is in the code?
The code is reversed.
Check what you're
talking. The code, like this one here, the projectors, at least I remember them being the opposite of the most common convention, which is the projector is IKJL minus ILJK, but the code had ILJK minus IKJL. Of course, you had it contracted with auxiliary vectors, but
yeah, okay.
So the code has. Oh, I see.
You even comment on it in the file.
Yeah, I remember there's a comment.
I did manage to reverse engineer the convention, but I didn't understand why it was different.
Okay.
Why is there that extra minus sign there versus the most common convention?
One of the conventions here is that for reasons of reflection positivity as well as uniformity when working with blocks 3D. We work in conventions where the second OPE channel is usually 430.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then why there's the extra minus sign on top of that?
Okay, if you do 430, then you should have a minus sign because you swap, but for the anti-symmetric, you have something.
Yeah. That's where the sign comes from.
Okay. Hey, you haven't changed anything with respect to scalar blocks, for example, or anything like that?
No. So in fact, the code is very modular. So if you wanted to, you could, I don't know.
What would happen if we flip the sign back?
What would happen if we flip the sign on that?
Yeah.
Weird stuff. You could have some channels be made by scalar blocks and some channels be made by blocks 3D,
uh-huh,
if you really wanted to. And the point is that it would work together cleanly. But yeah, the relative minus sign there is.
I mean, does it really matter?
It does at the level of the.
The evaluate block.
Yeah.
At most here. But then you just flip a sign here, I suppose.
Yeah, that's what you have there. You have 2, 3, 1, 4, which is ILJK.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's, so you do ILJK minus IKJL. So that's the convention that we use in BlockCD. So. Or did you just write the wrong thing? Or on the other slide?
So 2, 3 will be
JK.
So I just so this is not what the code is.
You just reversed it in this.
So which one is the convention? This one or the code?
The code.
The code. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So I just made a mistake here.
Yeah.
No, that would be correct, but it depends how you take the inner product to make the projector, because that's a 3-point structure, right? And you're going to contract it with another 3-point structure.
Yes.
And that you could end up getting the right sign.
That's a 4-point structure.
Is this the 4-point?
This is the projector. This is the projector.
Because I see. No,
this is 3-point. This is 3-point.
Yeah, if it's 3-point, it could be okay. You just have to take the inner product as 1, 2, 3, 4, 4, 3, 1, 2.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That could be fine.
Yeah. Yeah, the point is that these are just labels at this point, and the only place where they actually get defined is when we do the projector in this.
Okay.
Next step.
Okay, and then Then to combine the flavor structures with the conformal structures, which are here is the SO3 structure label. Sorry, and so here you see the keyword new type. So basically, this Lorentz O(n) structure just to wrap around the SO3 structure. And there's some, so the two combined together need to be made an instance of a three-point structure. And it just tell you, and so these two steps tell you what the combined total structure is. Right, and now the rest of the theory is...
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
So, if the user don't have a three-point structure, only have four-point structure, my question is, does the code require the user to have a three-point structure?
What do you mean if you don't have a three-point structure?
For example, if I only have a projector, I can write down cosine equation, and in principle, I can bootstrap that cosine equation. But does this code require the user to have explicit a three-point structure as well?
Yeah, I can say this, because I've done a very bad version of coding in this code where I did just copy someone else's projectors, and all it is you just come up with your different... You still just label your three-point structures corresponding to the exchanged operator, exactly as usual. You label your four-point structures corresponding to each crossing equation. And then you just program in the projector in this eval on block. It's just labels. This thing here is all labels. You need it there because it's just a label. You can do whatever you want with it.
If you have the four-point structure, you can treat it as a three-point structure.
For example, I don't have VVVV, but I don't have VVSS.
But you have VVVV, but propagating ones, you can pick it to be S or A or T, right? So. But this can be treated as three-point structure from VV to S, or VV to T, or VV to A, I think.
Yeah, so my question is, here, is those three-point structure, do you need to explicitly put the delta in the code? No.
No.
Okay.
No.
No.
It's up to here. So you see, those things label those things, and the label comes from 3ON RIP that just correspond to those.
There's
so everything here does not involve any of the explicit expressions.
To be very clear, there's not a single place in this code where an index appears. There's no such thing as an index.
Well, those 1, 2, 3, 4.
Okay, fine. That's a label. That's the name of a.
But what does the code actually do?
Sorry.
You'll see.
Okay, and so. Okay, so now we have combined the two parts of the three-point structures. And now just stepping back a little bit, now our spectrums are described by this channel type. We used to have like a pair of integers and then the parity. And here it's just because the channel type gets too long. And so We extract it out and define it separately. And now the channel types have three parameters. They are the spins. The half integers is a type that covers both the integer spins and the half integer spins. And the label, same parity label, and finally the ON RIP label. Okay. And so this ON group here is a number n the value of n in the ON symmetry. Okay.
Why this is rational?
Because in, do you mean why it shouldn't be integers?
Why not real? Why rational?
Rational in...
We use rational because rational is an exact type, which means that you don't run into machine precision errors. We use rationals as much as possible, and things are eventually converted to machine precision, but that's only done once the user specifies the precision that we want to do the computations. Rational is just Haskell's way of dealing with an exact quantity.
Okay,
and now, right, so now this part is similar to what we had before with four fermions, except that now we have extra labels of the ON representations. And yeah, so you just combine the conformal representation with the ON representations. They're exactly those things. Yeah, and this is a different case when we have the label here is the anti-symmetric tensor. So we just plug in the anti-symmetric tensor. Yeah, and this is the external operator channel that Alexander asked yesterday. And so here, they do, so you see the different ordering will correspond to different tensor structures here. Yeah, have questions on this size? Yesterday we have problems of why the change of the ordering, like how the change of ordering is reflected in the code.
Sorry, here SO3 is a function.
SO3 is exactly the type that corresponds to this. It's why it's so this way, yeah.
So the only reason the last line has the minus sign is not because of fermions, just because you swapped sigma and psi.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the first line, if I omitted the minus sign, would that cause a problem?
So, let me think. With these conventions, if we define it this way, then the what is it? Sigma, sigma. And what's the next one? I think those. So with this definition, those three match exactly to each other. Without
them to be cyclic, you mean?
No, it's just a, they are same numbers but might differ by a plus and minus sign, by a constant. And
the OP coefficients do not change by permutations. The OP coefficients are totally fixed. All the permutation changes that happen are absorbed into the tensor structures of your three-point functions. That's what this is saying. It's not cyclic, it's just literally every possible
component. But I mean, as far as the minus signs go, that relation there is cyclic.
Like, yeah. So it's just exactly the same signs. Yeah. So if without that minus signs, which one is it? Psi sig? Then you just to put a minus sign.
Yeah.
Okay, and so that's the what's left is just the crossing equations. And with the crossing equations, we have here are the three structures corresponding to three structures coming from composing four fermions. And those two structures is a crossing even and one structure that is crossing odd. So that those correspond to those different constructors here, just labeling Q plus Q minus Q3, and the unique ones are the first two. Okay, and so here are the functions we got from just pure from four fermions, and this is almost the same as the four sigma crossing equations we had yesterday, except now we rewrite them in terms of a block 3D by setting J so to zero. And so these are equations without global symmetry. And what we can do is reuse those functions, but just add the flavor structure to it. And the way we do it is, one more slide is those are crossing equations correspond to mixing fermions and sigma. And I think, we have six lines over there. And if you remember, we have slides this morning in this format. So you can match exactly those equations to the expressions in the code. And like x odd y even will be x odd y even. And the expressions in terms of the g's coming from here. OK. Yeah. So and now we can add flavor structures to all of them. And so it's just so in the Hyperion libraries, there are two functions defined in the Hyperion libraries. One of them is called the map4point. So this is basically allow you to change the structure, so the 4-point structure. So this is a definition of map4point. The map 4-point will take a function. This is a function mapping from structure to structures. And the rest is like your function coefficients, so g and four operators following it. And what it does is just to act this functions on the structure labels. So it just change, it maps your function coefficients from one structures to another structures. And so the f here in this expression is this pair with the first component leaving black. So this function, this you can think of as f. It's a function. And when it's taking a structure, it just puts the structure in the first component. And the result is a pair of structures that correspond to this. Okay. So what this bit does is to put to attach the Q plus global structures to whatever conformal structures you have in G. And so we just do it for Q plus, Q3, Q minus, and that's how we attach add the flavor structures into the crossing equation. Okay, and so FFSS and SSSS, the global structure is unique. So we just put unique here and the same thing. Okay, and this just in case I confuse you, it's just there's another function called map max operators, which works almost exactly the same, very similar to the map 4-point structure, except that f now is acting on each of the operators. And we had this bit here just because we are using the crossing equations from a different module. And the psi operator over there is a different psi operator defined in this file. So this f just map whatever we have in the old files to the psi in this file. Okay. Questions?
Okay. So this map ops is something defined in Haskell or?
Yeah, it's in Hyperion. It's in Hyperion. It's not a standard thing. Okay, and so we have our crossing equations. Now we need to turn them into the crossing matrix. And when we do it, so we will call this function called evav flavor coefficient. It basically takes the pair one with a conformal block. a pair of the first component is conformal blocks, and the second component is a flavor block. And it will evaluate the flavor blocks and make turn it into a number, and then multiply it with the conformal blocks.
In the build sequence, the conformal blocks gets replaced to the actual data.
Yeah. And so this is how the eval block is defined here. And so what it does is it takes a block labeled by the ON3-point structures and ON4-point structures, and it turns it into a number. So it takes the 3-point structure. The 3-point structures are here.
There's two of them. There's the ON 3-point structure R1, R2, R.
Right.
3-point structure R4, R3, R prime. And then F is the 4-point structure.
Yes, thank you. Yes, so exactly what it is written down here. So this is just type information. And here it's like the block contains 2 3-point structures. So it's 1, 2, and O, and then 4, 3, and O. And the last one is a 4-point structure. And just it takes an argument in this format. And it depends on what the representations are, they evaluate it differently to numbers.
Sorry, so now your 4-point structure, did you leave some freedom there, meaning that they don't need to be orthogonal or something? They don't need to be in one way corresponds to each internal representation? Is that what they are trying to do?
So 4-point structure does not involve internal representation.
I see. So you can just put in a list of complete references.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
And the advantage of this is that you can instead work, for example, on a basis that's crossing definite, which makes it much nicer. And then later you can project it from one to the other.
Yeah.
I see.
Okay. Yeah, and then the old stuff, except, yeah, it's the old stuff. It's the only addition here compared to from, I think it's the ON rep here. So it just read through the different ON reps and map them to the right channel. And really the real stuff.
Can
yes.
you comment on, like, this looks like a very scary amount of code. Can you comment on how scary it actually is?
Is this scary?
This?
Yes.
Scary? Okay.
Yeah, do you have to write this by hand or?
Okay, copy, take your fermions,
uh-huh.
Add those entries,
okay.
Copy three times, change that entries.
Yeah.
Change the what they are mapped to on the other hand side. That's the end.
I'm sure Neil would write a mathematical code to do that.
Okay, and that's the rest is the same, like turning your model into an SDP. And that's the end of the GeneWise. Okay, GeneWise examples. And practices will be, again, can just instead of bootstrapping the sigma and psi system, you can replace it with epsilons. So that changes the parity of the scalars. And it's, you need to think about how it affects your crossing equations and how it affects your OP coefficients. And if you find that really trivial, we can bootstrap the all three operator case. That will require us, first you need to put those parts and the sigma phi part together, and you need to add the crossing equations and OP channels corresponding to mixing all three operators up. Yeah, actually, that's the end of my tutorial today. Question.
So how long does this practice stage.
this one would be easy. And
I mean the first one.
Sorry, this one would be easy.
Easy means 1 day or 2 day or
okay, depends on how harsh you want to be on yourself. So actually I've given you all the data. It's like you I've given you the OP the 3-point structures and 4-point structures in the table set in from my lecture this morning. So you can just take those tables and compare like where you have to modify, just to put the numbers in. And but if you want to like rederive that tables and theoretically like find out what channels you need and what's the 3-point structures are involved, then that might take longer.
I mean, just the implementation.
If
you take my table and do this,
if you are familiar with the code, you can do it in 10 minutes. But the point is that none of you are familiar with the code. So
yeah, if you are really familiar with the code, it's 10 or even fewer. But
there's an inversion calculation here where take the amount of time that it took to do Ning's exercises on Monday and then do the inverse that because of the familiarity with each code base will change how fast you work. This is so anyway.
So yesterday's exercise was to mainly to get you familiar with the structure of the code. And once you get through that stage, I would say changing this is fairly quick. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And even changing this will be relatively quick if you take the things I give you in the morning. But deriving it will maybe involve some more thought process. Okay, so and tomorrow I'll finally get down to how to launch the job, the details of doing search and everything else. Okay, thank you.